So, hello everyone. Joseph Rudy here with Western Carolina University. I am here today with Ryan Ziegler and his wife of the Lazy Acres, and they are located in Marianna, Florida. Hey Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing pretty well. So I guess kind of if you can just give me kind of overall like how things are going for you and the family.
Well, my wife Kelly and I, along with our three sons, Garrett, Dylan, and Nathan, we operate the Lazy Acres family farm, and things have been going pretty well. We've experienced COVID, and we've experienced life at a little bit different pace, I guess you'd say. But overall, it's been really good for us. People have discovered us and local farms, and so a lot of people have come to the farm, and a lot of people have come to our farm store over the past year, and so we've been doing well.
That's wonderful to hear. hopefully my family will join you in the same enterprise here in about 3 years, but
okay.
Farther west, so we won't compete.
interestingly enough, one of the things that I believe, local is better. I mean, it's better for the animals, it's better for the farmer, it's better for the consumer. Mm-hmm. It's better on the environment. I mean, it's just better when you can stay local with something. And so, one of our encouragements is that there are now about 12 farms, within a stone's throw of our farm, that are beginning to do things like what we started doing several years back, having fall mazes and pumpkin patches and mm-hmm. farm days and things like that. And we think that's a good thing. For a long time, we were one of the only farms around here doing that. And I always thought, man, if we could just get more folks doing this, create a movement, we'd be in good shape. And so more and more farms in our area, in our county, are beginning to, open their doors and realize there's a big old audience out there that wants to learn about agriculture. And so I'm encouraged that you guys are wanting to get into ag and regenerative farming maybe, and so that I think that'd be great.
Yeah, I think there's been a pretty large disconnect with the kind of the general populace and farmers, just with everyone. Most people drive to a grocery store, they throw things in their cart and they walk out, and that's their extent of knowledge, kind of on the whole agriculture front. So yeah. I think it's pretty cool that, farmers like yourself and your neighbors and everything are kind of drawing people into that world to just kind of, see where their food is coming from,
Sure. Prior to COVID, in October of 2019, we did 12 field trips on the farm. And we had done field trips prior to that in years past, but that was probably our biggest single month. Was we did 12 during the month of October of 2019. And so, one of our goals and one of our passions, if you will, is that we want people to understand where food comes from. And, there's in our little small farm, we can take a group of second graders or a group of fifth graders or whatever age group they were, we can take them onto the farm, show them the cows, show them the pigs, show them the chickens, show them how we mill the feed, show them how we move the cows, and then take them into our farm store and say, oh, by the way, this is a pound of bacon, this is a pound of ground beef. Those animals, that you've been seeing out here on the farm, this is the result of all that work, Mm-hmm. And so, we do a very interactive field trip, and, we break the kids into groups. We have all sorts of activities, and so they get to see how everything works together, how good pasture management makes healthy soil, healthy animals, and those healthy animals in turn, you know, yield a very healthy meat product. And so it's just, you know, it's just very interesting that we do have that disconnect you're talking about. And so we want to kind of close that gap as best we can.
Yep, I absolutely agree. If you don't mind, could you kind of tell me a little bit how you started, just like an overview?
Yeah, my wife, Kelly, her family had farmed, I'm going to use the word forever.
Yeah, my grandfather he harvested his first peanut crop when he was age 8. And so he has been farming ever since.
Okay.
When he came home from World War II, he wanted to raise kids and cows, and that's what he did. He had, until his death in 1987, he raised 150 head of cattle. He was a peanut farmer, tobacco farmer, soybean farmer, watermelons, you know. And then I grew up with my dad doing a summer garden, and we went to farmers markets every summer, selling peas, butter beans, squash, cucumbers, okra, you name it. So farming has kind of always been, not necessarily in the forefront when I, you know, but it's always been a part of our family. Mm-hmm. And we had kind of taken, I guess, a sabbatical from it early in our marriage. We just would do little gardens here and there. But it wasn't until about 2009, Ryan underwent like a health crisis, and we had to change some things. We decided instead of paying a high health insurance deductible, we would take that money and we would invest in ourselves. And that's when we started a new health, journey. And in that health journey, it included raising our own food. We decided that we didn't like the food that was at the grocery store. We didn't feel like it was part of that health plan. And so we started with chickens, and then it kind of morphed into pigs and then cows and at one time rabbits and goats, but we have since kind of ventured out of that. So that's, it kind of had a multifaceted start, but that's kind of how we got to where we were. And we, the products that we have now is a result of the response that we had from our community when we had our first open farm day. And sold out of everything we had in that one day. And we looked at each other and was like, oh, man, I think we're onto something here.
Wow. Yeah, it's actually funny that you mentioned the health. Not funny, but we have a similar story. My wife and I, she had some health issues postpartum with our second son about a year and a half ago. And that's kind of what got us started on this whole journey of regenerative farming post-military.
Yeah, and, you know, we just came from the farmer's market, and probably 6 or 8 times today we got asked the question, you know, do you guys use hormones? Well, you know, of course the answer is no, because nobody uses hormones. But, you know, hormones have been illegal for a long time, but it leads into a much greater discussion and conversation. You know, the food industry, the food labeling culture that we live in, you don't know what to believe. If you go to a grocery store and you look at a package of something, I mean, you would think that those animals are being raised in beautiful meadows with big red barns and, you know, windmills, and the next thing you know, I mean, those animals never been outside, you know.
Yeah.
And so you see these labels and you don't know what to believe. And so I had a lot of health issues, and it was from just eating, you know, processed food. And you know, when I stepped away from that, I mean, I was having issues in my GI tract. I was having allergies, and you know, I haven't had allergies since we started, you know, growing our own food. And so, you know, and I mean, that was in 2009, so that's been a little while back. You know, but I was on all sorts of stuff, medicine, you know, and now I'm not on any prescription medicines. And I'm not trying to tell people people that, you know, start growing your own food and you quit taking whatever your doctor tells you. That's not my, I'm not saying that. But I do think that our food system is the link to a lot of people's ailments. And I know that was true in my life. And so anyway, if you look at the food culture that we live in, it's hard to know what to believe. You know, and so we really encourage people to tour the farm, you know, take a walk and tour and see what we do and why we do it, how we do what we do. And we've discovered that when people come to the farm and they see us move the cows and they see us move the chickens, and they understand that the cows kind of lead the way and then the chickens follow behind them and clean up the pasture and fertilize the pasture, you know, people kind of look at that and the light bulb just comes on. It just kind of makes sense to them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been a big, you know, selling point, I guess, if you will, for our farm, is that people can come here and see what we do. And there's no padlock gates or there's no biosecurity signs anywhere. I mean, it's just an open environment. It's farm, you know. We're not, you know, we're not hiding anything.
Yep. Were there any kind of challenges, specifically when you were first starting off?
I think at any scale in agriculture, no matter if, you know, you got one or two animals or if you got 1,000 animals, I think at any scale there's challenges. You know, everything's expensive.
Yeah, for us, my grandfather had farmed, but we didn't start full-time farming until 2014. We had some animals, but we had just enough that we could keep them in the backyard. Mm-hmm. But as we expanded, we realized, you know, we have no fences. The fences that my grandfather had put up in the 40s and 50s were no longer there. There were remnants of it. So we were having to basically start from scratch. And so, of course, that's time and money. You know, putting up new fences all over. Now what we cover a little over 100 acres, and all of that has at some point had to be cleared, fences put in, water lines put in, a solar well put in for the cows to have water. So those were some of the challenges that we faced early on that we had to address to be able to move forward with our business.
Okay. Yeah. I know that the startup period can be bumpy. I know it's, you know, you're always going to have your hard times, but I know starting up, you can particularly have very expensive problems to deal with.
And now, and it's not so much, it's still a challenge, but it's gotten better. But especially during COVID, our biggest challenge was getting our animals to a butcher. There's not a lot of local butcher, USDA butcher shops in our area. The one that we use is the closest one to us, but it's 70 miles from the house. And so that is probably our biggest challenge to date, now that fences are up and pastures are established, is finding those butcher dates at a USDA inspected butcher.
Yeah, I've heard that. I'm tied into a few farms over here, Crestview area, north of Crestview, and they're echoing that same issue, just finding a USDA inspected facility for processing.
Yes, we have dates for animals that haven't been born yet.
Yeah, that's a problem right there.
From an entrepreneur point of view, you know, that was a problem that we looked at, and we were like, okay. How do we solve this problem? Because, you know, it's not like you can just say, oh, well, I'll just open a butcher shop. You know, well,
that's
a whole other set of challenges. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other world. So, you know, I went and met with our butcher. It's been 2 or 3 years ago now, I guess. But maybe 2 years ago. But I went and met with him, and I said, listen, I understand completely that my dream and our dream of having a, you know, a homestead farm and a farm store on the farm, you know, and opening our farm up for people to come and learn and enjoy and purchase. I know that that's my dream, but that's not necessarily the dream of you guys that own this butcher shop. And, you know, and so how can I help you realize your dreams? How can I help make your life easier? And the butcher, he said, well, you know, the number one thing we deal with here is just time and money and infrastructure. You know, he says, you know, and he gave two or three examples of how he had had an air conditioning unit go out and a freezer compressor had gone out, and he had to put in a new, you know, handling area in the back there, and all of it added up to thousands of dollars. And so our commitment to them at the butcher was, okay, well, we bring one cow and three or four pigs every 4 weeks to the butcher. And this coming year, we're expanding that some. And so, you know, our commitment to them was, well, we'll be here. I mean, you can count on us every month. We're going to bring what we're supposed to bring, and they're going to be healthy. They're going to, you know, we're not going to give you a hard time. And so their whole thing was just consistency. Because if they know that we're coming in there and we're going to spend, you know, $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, whatever the dollar amount ended up being that particular month, every month they know that they can afford to hire that new employee or fix that broken freezer or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And so for them, it wasn't about the dream of having a farm store and a homestead farm and growing their own food. They could, I won't say they could care less, but I mean, that just wasn't their dream. That was my dream. But I can't do
what we do without them.
Yeah, we can't function without them. And so so that would be one thing I would, you know, if small farms could hear me say something, that would be one thing I would say is, you know, find that butcher shop or find that local network of people and say, hey, how can we work together to make this a win for you and a win for me? And
build those relationships.
Yeah, just build that relationship where they understand you're for real. You're not just using them for a service. And if you find that service somewhere else 10 cents cheaper, you go to that new service. You know, they can't function that way. And so anyway, that's something that we did a couple of years ago. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, that we did do well during COVID is we had a steady supply of meat coming, you know, from the butcher shop. Now, we were selling out fast because people realized, wow, they're the only ones in town that have meat. And so we were selling out faster than we could replenish. But at least we could tell our customers, hey, I'm taking a cow and three pigs in a week, or I'm taking a cow and four pigs in 2 weeks. And so anyway, that relationship that we built really helped us, you know, not only through COVID, but I mean, it just helps us have a consistent product line available for our customers.
Yeah, and I know particularly in small business, relationships are, I mean, relationships should be important with everyone through daily life, but particularly small business,
right.
You know, small family farm, that's critical. So for you, for your farm, when you have something, like a problem come up, how do you guys manage that, or how do you resolve that issue?
Well, since we're a family, we do it usually Sunday nights. You know, we'll just call if we need to address something right away, and we do it right away. But in the planning portion of some of our farm events, we just sit down with the boys and say, hey, you know, this is what, if we did this last year, you know, we always write down the pros and cons, what we did good, what we did bad, and we just try to address immediate things immediately, and future things, we try to sit down as a family and work through those problems. Ryan probably deals more with the day-to-day conflicts than I do. So.
One of the things that comes to mind immediately when you mention that, our farm store inventory, we have glass front, glass front freezer in there in our farm store. And so our farmer's market freezer rides with us in the truck, in the back mm-hmm. of the truck, and it's a big, giant chest freezer. And then we have an online inventory. And so trying to make sure that you've got all three of those worlds in sync, because at the farmer's market, you're selling face-to-face. Mm-hmm. On the farm store, you're basically selling face-to-face, but it is an inventory system all its own. And then online, you know, it's a whole different system. And so occasionally, once or twice, you know, we've had, you know, a package of this or two packages of that that ended up online that we sold to an individual that walked up at the farm store or to someone at the farmer's market. And when you sell something you don't have, you know, that's, you know, you have to deal with that. And so immediately what we do is we've had that happen once, I think, we call the customer and we say, hey, I've sold you something I don't have, you know, here's my resolution. A lot of times, because of the frequency of our butcher dates, I've got it coming in the next week, and they're pretty cool about it. But we have had that happen once where we sold something we just didn't have. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, I think in anything, dealing with a problem immediately, if not sooner, is a better way to do it than to let it sit. We instituted a rule on the farm several years back, when our boys were younger, they wanted to help all the time, and they still do. They still work diligently on the farm. But we instituted a rule that if you can do it in 2 minutes or less, do it now. And what that started from was tools, putting tools back where they belong. If you get a wrench out of the toolbox, if you're using the impact driver, you know, don't just set it down. Don't get busy doing something else and forget about it and the weeds grow up around that tool sitting in the yard out there. Go ahead and put it up right now. And so we instituted that rule. If you can do it in 2 minutes or less, do it now. With young boys, it made them look at what they had to do and figure out, well, can I do this in 2 minutes? I mean, this is something I need to, what do I do, you know? And so it made them think through the process of what they were actually doing. Then it also made them think, hey, I need to go put this up. Yeah. And so it gave them some responsibility. It gave them the, you know, the, hey, I did that well. You know, I accomplished that. And so we sort of have that same mentality in any problem, not just task on the farm. But, you know, if you run into a problem, you deal with it, you know, and,
So far, so good.
Yeah, I really like that. You can do it in 2 minutes, do it now. That's to tuck that one away.
Yeah.
So how have your experiences on the farm, your past experiences shaped how you run the farm now?
I think definitely my bachelor's degree was in electronic engineering. And so that was in the mid-90s when I went to college. And all of that technology that I learned back then, I mean, the ideas are there, but at the same time, the protocols are all different. The language is all different today. So if I had to go into a place today and get a job doing something in the electronic world, I couldn't do it. I mean, that's just, I'm not current on certifications and things. But it has helped us. You know, it's helped me in way problem solving. You know, our website, we've done a bunch of video stuff, and so being able to use my technology background and overlap that into farming has helped. You know, we put up all high tensile electric fence. By far the cheapest fence that you can put up, and I've talked to a lot of guys, and they're just like, man, I just don't like using electric fence. And what it is, when you really boil it down and talk to them, they're just intimidated by it because they're not sure if I should connect this here or that there. Well, I kind of understand it, and so it's not really intimidating to me. So we've saved a lot of money over the years running electric fence versus anything else. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of helped, you know, just in the day-to-day, you know, know, if we talk to the website person or if we talk to a graphic designer, we can kind of talk tech with them and get in their world for just a minute, you know, and that's helped. You know, Kelly's background, she's not chiming in, so I'm going to chime in for her. But, you know, we've run cows through chutes and had to give them shots. And, you know, we vaccinate for blackleg and pink eye with our cows. And, you know, and Kelly's got a medical background. So, I mean, she's right there, you know, and able to, you know, jump in and give a cow a shot or whatever, you know. And that's all in it. You can't...
And both of us too have in our careers leading up to farming have been in managerial positions where we've managed people, whether it be through my company doing home health care, Ryan with video production, and church, you know, church ministry. So we've dealt with people, and so definitely what we've learned from being supervisors of other people also helps us resolve conflicts here on the farm, helps us make decisions. You know, we're not afraid to make decisions, and then whether it's good or bad or indifferent, we know, hey, there's consequences, this, you know, and we're able to process that through that experience that we've had managing people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Are you, I don't imagine you're planning on ever going outside the family. Are you going to ever hire, do you have plans to ever hire anybody, you know, to come on the farm or going to keep it
we
within?
We have hired seasonal help. When we did a fall corn maze in 2018 and then again last year, we did have to hire outside the five of us because it was more than the five of us could handle. And so thankfully we have some good friends that also have a farm and were available, so they were able to help us with field trips and on the weekends when the corn maze was at its peak. So but it was people that we knew personally and through our 4-H club that our children, you know, judge in. And so those are the people that we have hired. If someone outside of that, you know, we would probably have a pretty, well, even with them, we had a pretty lengthy orientation process anyway, because we're very conscious and very, I don't know what the word is, but we wear a certain dress code when we are doing field trips and corn maze. There's certain ways that we won't. The people that we hire or even our volunteers to address people, how say the same story, you know, you don't be confrontational, you know, so there would probably be, even with our friends, it was pretty extensive on how we wanted them to respond to certain questions that they may be asked.
Okay. Yeah. No, I completely get it. How are some ways you guys keep up with just best practices within regenerative farming?
Well, definitely, you know, YouTube is a huge thing.
Yeah.
There's several regenerative farmers that I watch almost daily. I mean, Greg Judy, Will Harris from White Oak Pastures, Joel Salatin. Mm-hmm. I read some, but I listen to a lot of Audible books, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, and so I spend a lot of time on the tractor instead of spend a lot of time, you know, with headphones on, just learning. Mm-hmm. And so we try to stay on top of things like that.
We also have a neighbor that lives down the road that's been farming for longer than we've been alive, and he has been a wealth of, like a mentor to us as well. Not always on current farming issues, but just in just common sense farming decisions. And so when we can run things by him as well when we need to.
Yeah, I think that's something I learned from Joel Salatin. He mentions, you know, don't ever just because someone else, a different, you know, a farmer is farming in a different manner than you would like to, it doesn't, you know, don't discount them or discredit them, like what they can bring to the table. Like you mentioned, Kelly, the farming decisions kind of thing, like he may not farm in a regenerative manner, but he has, you know, all of that experience, other experience to bring.
Exactly. And he's been farming long enough. He's seen the trends. If we get anxious, he's like, just hold on. Just be patient. It's going to swing around again, you know?
Yeah. And then, so could you guys tell me a little about your marketing? Like, how do you generate clientele? I guess you really haven't had to generate clientele recently, but,
Well, early on, you know, we were going to farmers markets and primarily Facebook, and, we did some like promotional stuff. Like we gave away, well, at the time we had honeybees on the farm. And so we had like a pound of honey, a Lazy Acre t-shirt, and I don't know what else. It was three or four little items. And we just wanted people to sign up to receive our email newsletter. And so they would give us their name and their email address. And then once at some point in that gathering of information, we would say, okay, we're going to have a drawing. You know, we'd put the names in a hat and just randomly reach in and we'd draw. And so we got a lot of email correspondence through that. And we did that three or four times early on in the farm's existence. We haven't done it as often recently, just simply because we just, honestly, we haven't had to. But Facebook has been a big one. Now, I will say that Facebook has changed. And I'm not one of these conspiracy people theory that, you know, think Facebook is, I don't know what's going on, but I can tell you that the number of views and the number of likes and the number of shares have definitely changed with Facebook over the past year. Instagram is something that I really like. I don't spend a lot of time on Instagram, but I like being able to take a picture or shoot a video and immediately upload it to Instagram, and it will automatically go to our Facebook page as well. And it carries the hashtags over and everything. And it's just really simple. It just works a lot easier. Facebook, you know, their business suite sometimes can be a little, you know, a little clunky. But Instagram works pretty good, you know, and it automatically goes into Facebook. When we do the farm or the fall maze, sometime about the third week or so of August, we will start advertising. We'll use some digital billboards. We'll use Facebook. We'll use our local TV station, or not local, but they're in Panama City Beach, which is about 70 miles. So it's our most local station. So we'll begin to do that as far as advertising, but as far as marketing, we try to have content often. I won't say we upload something every single day, but we just try to document life on the farm. We try to upload three or four times a week. At least one of those, we want it to be a video explaining something that we're doing. And sometimes all you have to do is say, hey, this is a video of us moving the cows. And that's good enough. There's other times where we really go into depth and talk about our winter feeding program or whatever, you know. Now, we do have a YouTube channel. Our biggest hurdle with our YouTube channel is our internet. We're in the boonies, and our only option for internet is Verizon, and it's just not a great option. And so there's a lot of data caps, and it slows down at times. And it's just, when you're trying to upload, you know, a picture, that's one thing. When you decide you're going to upload 2 or 3 gigabytes of video, you know, it's not a great option. And so anyway, we're hoping for new internet things soon. one day.
Yeah, I know that social media now is kind of, I mean, if you don't exist on social media, your business is probably not going to exist for very long.
Right.
Yes, and that's our main way of communicating with our customers is through social media.
Yeah. We've got a website, and our online store has been a wonderful thing. And our website is, I'm proud of it. I think it looks very good. But it's basically a very stylized brochure. And so, you know, the online store is even separate from the website. You can get back and forth. They function with one another. But yeah, social media is, I mean, if you're not on some kind of social media, then I don't know what you do. yeah. And in our world, like I say, Facebook, we're on Instagram, YouTube, and of course, then we have the website. We looked at one point, you know, I mean, we've got people that ask us, are y'all on TikTok? Are y'all on Twitter? Are you on, I mean, there's a million different ones out there. And I'm not saying we won't be, but
time is the challenge at this point.
It can be a rabbit hole. I mean, you can just spend all day long, you know, on social media, but, you know, we farm for a living. And so we started at 4:30 this morning. And so, you know, it's a challenge sometimes because every time you do, you know, if like TikTok, for instance, I mean, you can spend a lot of time putting together something that's really cool, but it's a lot of time to put it together. And, you know, you may get a lot of bang for your buck out of it, or you may not. Mm-hmm. And so we've just tried to be very consistent where we are, and hopefully people will come searching for us there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So how would you recommend setting price points on products?
We know how much it costs to feed our animals. We know how much it costs to get them to that point at the butcher. And so our prices don't follow commodity type feed type prices or commodity industry, because we try to control as much as we can on the farm leading up to that animal being ready for process. So
we just have
priced it accordingly.
Yeah, the short answer is this is what it costs to grow it. And
package it, process it.
And something that we have, I mean, we occasionally, you will run into this, people say, oh, why is this so expensive or why is that so expensive? But that is like probably less than 1%. I mean, we never really run into that because, and I think, this is my thought process on this, I think we're giving people a very high quality product. I think we're giving people something that they understand that this is just good and quality cost. I mean, there's just, you know, that if you have ever seen the little truth triangle, you know, where it's fast, good, and cheap. Well, you know, it's cheap doesn't exist if it's fast and good. You know what I mean? And so, having something good cost, and our product, we feel like, and we feel like we've got a, you know, a fairly large customer base that would agree that, you know, our product is a good product. And
more often than not, we hear at the farmer's market, at the farm store, oh, wow, you know, your meat's the same price, or it's even a little less than what we're used to paying for it at the grocery store. You know, when beef went up so high during COVID, our price remained the same because nothing changed in our system. Mm-hmm. And so people were like, aren't you going to charge more? We're like, no, this is what it costs for us to raise it. We're not going to follow that fad trend. And so, and I think when you have a consistent price and the price is the price, you don't apologize for what you're charging to raise a quality animal, then people will appreciate that, and they will buy quality.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are kind of waking up to that fact that, you, particularly in the food industry, you get what you pay for. So
yeah,
absolutely.
Well, and like Kelly mentioned, in COVID, diesel fuel, farm diesel, at one point during COVID, we burn on diesel fuel, we burn about 250 gallons of fuel every 8 to 10 weeks. Okay, mm-hmm. And so during COVID, the lowest that diesel got that we purchased was $1.31 a gallon. That was off-road diesel, farm diesel.
Mm-hmm.
It's $2.69 right now. And so during COVID, there again, you had these shortages. You had the supply chain was not functioning right. The system was fragile. And here we are over here posting on Facebook, hey, we've got ground beef. And sell out that afternoon, and then have another cow ready, and we've got ground beef back, and then sell out again, and people were asking, why is y'all's the same price as it was before? And well, this is what it costs to raise it. And of course, our diesel fuel bill had dropped in half, so we were still making good money. And cheaper than anybody else. And I think that's an overlooked part of, we could have jacked the price up and we would have made more money, but we would have been just like everybody else. And at the end of the day, a lot of those people that discovered us during COVID have come back week after week after week after week at the farmer's market and to the farm store, and they're sold. I mean, and so, I believe in treating people the way that I would want to be treated. And so that's why we didn't jack our price up. That's why we kept it consistent, and we've earned some customers that way. And I think at the end of the day, I think that's a win. I think that's a good thing. And two, we've got three sons. We've got 16, 17, and 20-year-old sons, and so we want them to grow up and be men of character and be gentlemen and not let me take this one for a ride as far as I can get it to go, because that ride may be bumpy before it gets over with, and so we want them to see hopefully something that's of integrity, and not, well, daddy sure screwed them, he was paying less for diesel fuel than he ever had, made a whole lot of money on them people. I just don't want my boys to see me do that. And I'm sure that there are people that would hear this that would say, go softy or whatever. But anyway, I'm rambling now.
Well, I have to agree with you. We definitely need some more people with integrity around here.
Well, and there again, I'm not boasting of our integrity. I mean, we work at it every single day, and we fall short more days than not, I know. But at the same time, we got to be able to lay our head down on the pillow at night and go to sleep and feel good about ourselves too.
Yep, I completely understand. I guess so. I'll make this the last question. Could you, I guess, briefly describe what a typical workday looks like for you, for your family?
Yeah, we start early, especially we're in Northwest Florida, and right now, we've hit the heat and humidity, and so typically we're up and out the door 5:30, 6 o'clock, somewhere in that neighborhood. Yesterday, I was out at 5:40 or so, and had to move a couple of things around, a piece of equipment in the yard. Went and hooked up a bush hog because I had some mowing to do, and we fed the cows, we fed the pigs, we fed the chickens. And when I say feed the cows, we've gotten some new cows, and we're giving them some perennial peanut hay. so they can like us and we can like them back, you know. And and so anyway, but you know, we filled two or three orders at the farm store. You know, I talked to a couple of different people on the phone about different things. I had a one of our suppliers, if you will, for the farm store items. We carry a product line called Green Gate Olive Grove. They have some spices and rubs and vinaigrettes, and we carry their products. And so they came and did inventory, and you know, we paid an invoice on theirs. And so you know, the typical day is, you know, it's probably not a whole lot different than, you know, most people's job. I mean, we work outside. We repaired a fence that was needing repair, and we needed a fence row. And you know, I'm sure if you sit in an office, you know, you talk on the phone and do the same kind of thing. We talk on the phone a lot, but we're working while we do it, you know. And so anyway,
not every day looks exactly the same. There are days when we have to get up early and load animals to take to the butcher, and we have to have them there by a certain time. Then there's days where we go and pick up the products, have to load the freezers and pick up the beef and pork. There's days where, you know, coming up we'll be processing chickens on the farm. So that day looks a lot different than a day where we're mowing or doing fence work. It's like we're on like a 3 or 4 day work cycle, you know. Mow and repair fence one day, move animals the next, you know, we move animals every day and feed them every day. But some of those tasks just aren't tasks that are done every day, but maybe every few days or every week. So.
Okay. Well, I think, unless you had any other closing comments, I think that pretty much wraps it up.
I think that's it. I hope you can use some of our rambling along there. Maybe that'll be of use to you. I hope it is.
I definitely appreciate your time. Thank you so much.